Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 53 of the show. And on tonight's episode, well, due to all the conflicts of the past couple months, we've only just ended Disney Month last week, or should I say last review, and it's time to jump right into what we usually do on April, or what we started last year on April, since last year was the first year. That's that Superhero Month has finally returned. Yes, in this month, we go through all different types of American superheroes, both television shows and movies, though in this case it's mostly going to be movies. And for the first episode, we're going to review a movie. I was going back and forth on last year on whether to review. It's become probably my second favorite Batman movie of all times, and that's like adding both the animated and the live action movies together. That is Batman Under the Red Hood. Direct-to-DVD released at DC Entertainment / Warner Brothers Entertainment released. Want to say 2010-2009. Based off the Red Hood storyline that ran through Batman and Detective, written by Judd Winnick, who is also the writer of the direct-to-DVD movie. That was done, I want to say, back 2003, possibly 2004. Yeah, there's a whole history that I'm going to get into in just a second, but it's just a wonderful movie. There's a lot of good stuff that we're going to get into when we get into the review itself. As I just said a second ago, there is a kind of a bit of a history that goes through, and it is one of the things to measure these movies, these direct-to-DVD DC Universal movies upon, and that is whether, you know, how they sort of instantly connect the viewers who may not know the original storyline to the storyline or not. You know, some do it better than others. This is one, I think, the good ones, because I think it simplifies it. It also helps that the original writer of the story is also a writer for the film. So he was, and it's in the interviews. If you have the special edition DVD like I do, I have the Blu-ray edition, on the extra features, you know, he somewhat talks about how it was a little bit easier to work on the film here. But to go into a short history of the actual story itself, this is really tied to probably one of the most infamous storylines in comics itself, that being Batman's death in the family, that was done in 1988. For those who don't know, Death in the Family was the storyline there where Jason Todd, the Robin at the time, was killed. in the storyline. There was build up these first three issues, and then at the end of the third issue, there was this big explosion where Robin was in, aka Jason Todd, who's the second Robin, was in a warehouse, and readership was given a chance to vote whether he died or lived. You know, they had to use this newfangled technology, the telephone, and call in for 50 cents, and, you know, if they called one number, it was a vote to kill him. If they called one another number, it was a vote for him to live. And by 77-78 votes, the vote was to kill him. And so DC killed off Jason Todd, and history was made. And of course, this would, while not kind of a direct sequel, it would eventually lead to the whole Lonely Place of Dying arc that would introduce Tim Drake, which is my favorite Robin. And 15 years later, a storyline that ran in Batman, and I think Detective as well, when of all the times to blank on the name of the author, I had to sort of quickly peek there for a second onto my bookshelf, but Jeff Loeb, who was at the time writing that in the early, I think 2000s when the storyline came out, along with Jim Lee. I keep peeking over just to look at the name because I'm blinking on them. But they wrote a storyline called Hush, and in the storyline, Clayface is disguising himself as Jason Todd as the character Hush to try to throw off Batman, or he's been hired to do that. Whether inspired by that or not, a couple years later, Judd Wittick would write Jason Todd's Return in a arc called Red Hood, where it was as pretty much what the plot of this movie is concerned. Though there are some differences because of how comics are written and the different storylines you go over. With all that, that's really the quick history behind the actual story that this movie is based off of. So, with that all being said, let's get right into it. Let's go over our synopsis for the movie. Batman Under the Red Hood starts off with a flashback of the last moments of Jason Todd. Joker beating him with a crowbar, and then leaving him to die as he's rigged a warehouse that they're in to explode. Batman tries to get there in time, but unfortunately can't, and the building blows up and Jason Todd dies. Just fast forward a couple years later, in Gotham, and a new masked person has entered the drug trade of Gotham, who goes by the name of Red Hood, and is challenging the top dog of the drug trade and the top gangster boss who has complete control of Gotham, Black Mask. He forces some drug dealers to join his cause under the premise that if they don't, he'll kill them. Meanwhile, Batman stops with the help of Nightwing, stops a group of thieves who have stolen a mystery box that contains the Cyborg Amazo, who is a cybernetic being that can absorb the superpowers of major superheroes, like Superman. After defeating Amazo and destroying him, Batman and Nightwing try to get information out of the thugs of who set them up, only for them to be shot from a very, very far away. This leads Batman on a chase to chase down the sniper, who turns out to be Red Hood, who leads him to a chemical factory where the first Red Hood and Batman fought, and led to that first Red Hood being thrown into a vat of chemicals. The Red Hood escapes, and Batman is left wondering who he is. After the Red Hood hijacks another Black Mask shipment, and Nightwing and Batman give chase, and he gets away, the clues are left that this Red Hood might be Jason Todd. As Batman continues to look for clues, the Black Mask sends out a hit on the Red Hood and sends the fearsome hand of four. Batman comes to help Red Hood, and they fight him off with the whole fight ending with Red Hood killing one of the Fearsome Four. The clues continue to stack up, and Bruce finally decides to dig up Jason's grave, where he finds basically a life-size doll made of latex. Furious at his own stupidity, Bruce heads out towards the one person that can tell him why he did this, Ra's al Ghul. Back in Gotham, however, Black Mask, forced to deal with a psychotic to try to stop Red Hood from killing him, breaks the Joker out of prison and gives him guns and people to try to kill the Red Hood. Batman arrives at Ra's al Ghul's residence, and Ra's al Ghul tells the story of how the whole thing years ago that killed Jason Todd was part of a setup where he had hired a Joker to lure Batman away while he tried to destroy the economy of Europe. It unfortunately led to the Joker kidnapping Robin and killing him, which was not part of Ra's plan. So Ra's al Ghul made a pact that not only would he not try to do Batman again, but try to bring Jason back to life using one of his Lazarus pits. While it initially succeeds, at the time, Jason is completely insane and runs screaming out of the cave and out of his residence and down falls into a ravine where Ra's could never find him. After hearing the story, Bruce heads back where the Joker has stopped, took in a truck and that's full of all the drug dealers that were working with the Red Hood, and along with Black Mask himself, and is causing a big ruckus. The Red Hood arrives, and they have a bit of talky-talky back. When the Joker sets Black Mask and the whole drug dealers on the truck on fire, Batman arrives, puts it out, and tries to take the Joker away, but the Red Hood nabs Joker first and tells Batman to meet him at Crime Alley. At Crime Alley, Batman and Red Hood do battle, where the Red Hood finally takes off his Red Hood and reveals himself to be Jason Todd. They continue to fight, and the fight ends up eventually back at Jason's hideout, where he reveals he's holding the Joker, and reveals that the whole plan, while to, stop crime by running it himself, a bigger part of his plan was to get the Joker free, because, while he forgave Bruce for not saving him, he cannot understand for the life of him why the Joker is still not alive. Batman then explains that it's because it's too easy instead of it being too hard. It's too easy for him to want to cross that line and kill the Joker, so he doesn't. Jason Todd finally puts Batman in a position to say either kill him or he'll kill the Joker, but Batman is able to turn the tables and save everyone. In a last ditch effort, Jason Todd presses a button and sets a countdown for explosives to go off. And while Joker tries to stop Batman from disarming him, Batman knocks him out cold and grabs Jason, trying to escape with him. After the building explodes, Batman finds Jason nowhere to be found, but the Joker somehow still alive. The Joker is taken back to Arkham. The Black Mask is under investigation for crimes. And Batman continues on his way, with the last scene of the movie being the first night Jason donned the Robin costume. This is our review of Batman Under the Red Hood. welcome back, and let's get right into it as we usually do. And let's start off with music, and I really, really love the overall score of this film. Again, this is mostly, we're just going to be talking about score here. The entire score is wonderful. It's just very subtle, very dark underscore to this theme. Very gritty feel. I love the main theme. I love the use of strings in the main theme. The use of percussion is also really well done. And when I say the use of percussion, I'm not talking like the obvious type of drums. The use of sort of the bass drums and sort of the lower sounding percussion instruments that are just absolutely wonderful. I mean, the main theme, I think one of the big differences why I like it, it's much slower. There's a much slower, monotonical, sort of gothic pace to the theme that I really, really love. Very different from like the Elfman or the Zimmer theme, both of which have more sort of grandeur and sort of a, you know, Elfman has more of a pop to his theme, Zimmer has more of a grandness to it, but there's a more quickening pace to it. While in their own ways still being dark, here it's a much more slow, methodical, gothic sense to the theme, a sense of foreboding, of, you know, sort of dark change. That I really, the ending theme, oh god, just, it's the ending theme that plays during the credits. You know, it's one of those things, again, it's a movie that I love watching so much that I immediately want to rewatch it again, but at the same point in time, it's this very foreboding theme to where it's like, did we have a happy ending? Because it's just almost like it's a very sad, melancholy ending, you know, this theme that's very foreboding sort of plays. And the music in the rest of the series is really well done. And part of it is, you know, there are a fair number of scenes to where there is actual music there, but it's so well blended with sort of the background sounds, and it's this very sort of quiet ambient music that it blends in with the background, just enhances the scene. I mean, if you didn't know what to look for in listening for music, you know, I don't think most people would even know that in some scenes there is music playing. One of these scenes is the scene where Joker's about to... it's the scene to where I believe Batman and Nightwing are heading to see the Joker, and there's a shot where they sort of go down the hallways of Arkham Asylum towards Joker's pen where Batman and Nightwing are. And it's this very sort of soft, ambient, yet foreboding music. It's very, very well done. It only pops up loud enough to, for a couple seconds here or there, for you to hear it. And if you're not knowing what you're looking for, you don't even realize that there's music playing in the background. But it's just absolutely wonderful. I just love it. And overall, it's a score that I would welcomely pick up. With that, let's move on to animation. And I love the overall style. The sort of cool, again, it's Bruce Timm's, you know, evolved style. And of course, with these direct-to-DVD movies, there's definitely a sense here of trying to, while being Bruce Timm, also sort of channel the art from the comic that it's based off of. And you can definitely sense it here. And it's definitely a gritty Gotham City. And I think that's, you know, whether it be the character designs, the backgrounds of Gotham City, and all the art, there's a grittiness and sort of just a, sort of, along with a gothic, I should say, sort of feel, a gothic gritty feel to the art that I absolutely enjoy. And the flashbacks, again, I love that how the flashbacks sort of, it's almost as if, oh, it was a less grittier time when it was really no different. So the flashback art is very good, but just again, this very gothic, gritty type of feel to the art. And it, along with a very organic feel to the humans, and the line work, I think it's, you know, the line work is very Bruce Timm, but it goes alongside with this sort of very flowing, very organic sort of, like I said, gothic grim art style. Moving on to the character design, I love Batman. Again, just, he's not too bulky, he's not too skinny, I think he's just right in this. You know, that's something I think people may not understand is, you know, when you design Batman, you can make a bad design. One of the reasons I kind of don't like the Brave and the Bold design of Batman is, and while I enjoy the show, is I think he's just too sort of stocky and everything. You know, here it's just right sort of, and he, the design sort of commands this presence that I love, that really flows with this sort of portrayal that's in the movie of Batman as this sort of commander. Jason Todd, again, the design inspired, I should say, from the actual comics itself. I think the design very fits, you know, I myself am a fan of Jason Todd and Red Hood. I read the Red Hood and the Outlaws comic book that's from DC right now that comes out monthly. And I really love the look of that sort of the sort of leather jacket and the sort of gray, almost, I guess, body armor type of shirt and the pants, cargo pants and everything. I just really love that look. I think it's a great look. It's a very forbidding, a sense of dangerous type of feel to the character through that look. And of course, the red helmet is very awesome as well. And I love the way the eyes are worked with and used in the animation, in the design. Nightwing, the classic sort of Nightwing that everybody loves, the blue and sort of black suit, the modern version, I should say, not the older version that, like, people go, God. I thought it was designed very well. I love sort of the more slimness, sort of the gymnastic feel to the design. And I say that, you know, really accounting for Dick Grayson's gymnastic skills that are really part of his character. And Joker, a different blend of sort of different feels of Jokers, not completely straight out of the comic, but just sort of I don't know how to put it, but again, at least, you know, in one of those final scenes where he has the shirt on, just almost taking a more square approach to it, to really do something different with the Joker that I find really interesting. His hair almost being a bit dreadlocky, if that's to describe it. Not quite to the sense that they would do in the Batman animated series, but it's almost this feel, just something different and unique that really blends itself. Because again, this is really the, if you think about it, really one of the first times where they were going with a Joker who would not be voiced by Mark Hamill, as I'll get to in cast and credits in the next big talking point or the next big review section. John DiMaggio did the voice, and we'll get to his voice work in this, like I said, in a couple minutes, or 10 minutes, because probably gonna be playing trailers before we get to acting, as we usually do. But again, this is blocky, and I find it just an interesting design, because it's something different. It really is a different design for the Joker, and I do enjoy it. I think there's an organic feel that I think works very, very well. It brings the Joker, I think, down to a more human level than putting him on that just like complete psychopathic level that a lot of people draw into him through the art. There's a more down-to-earth, more human feel to his design. And I think the word I'm probably looking for is the sense of being an older person. It's a Joker that feels like a Joker with age, which I actually very, very much like. Ra's al Ghul's design, very well done, very classic Ra's al Ghul. There's an eminence, sort of a grace there, along with the commanding presence that a good Ra's al Ghul character design brings with it. And the other character designs are done extremely well. Black Mask is just creepy with the mask and everything on. And the whole Miami Vice look to him, which I can't help but laugh at. I just find that funny. Moving on to the next sort of talking point in animation, the action sequences. And I'll bring sort of vehicles into this as well. The action sequences and the use of vehicles, extremely well done. The vehicles themselves were CG elements, but yet at the same time, they seemed very, very well done. I loved the way the Batplane was used, and I loved the design of the Batplane, along with the Batmobile. Definitely, you can sense something being taken from the Nolan Batman films, as, you know, that Batmobile has those very jumbo tires. But as far as the action scenes and the fight sequences, oh my god, the fight sequences are the epitome of a win. They are just awesome. As such, the final fight is probably the best in my mind, but each fight sequence is just awesome and really well done. That first fight sequence where it's Amazo versus Batman and Nightwing, just extremely well done. It really showed just how easy, while they're now on their own as superheroes, it shows you how easy, you know, Dick Grayson and Bruce can just go right back into working together again. I think my favorite shot in there is, you know, when they're working together and then they shoot the lines and they do that sort of dual punch. Of course, the chase scene that followed after that with the Batplane and Red Hood and the I guess it's a Mustang, I would say, possibly. But sort of classic sort of muscle car. I don't think they necessarily show that it's a Mustang. I'm just going with a guess that it's a Mustang. But it's a classic sort of muscle car with a detachable top. I thought it was extremely well done. It was a quick chase, but extremely well done, and told the story it needed to tell about the Red Hood. The sort of chase sequence of the Red Hood on the sort of second, with that, the drop of the weapons with the helicopter and everything. I loved the movement and the run and everything, and the sort of back and forth between Batman and Nightwing, and of course the Red Hood. Again, it told the story of Red Hood. It gave you those clues that you could follow along with as Bruce was trying to figure out who Red Hood was. If you were a knowledgeable audience member, you would figure it out, and those who didn't were still able to be surprised by it. The fight where Batman and Red Hood fought the Fearsome Four, again, extremely well done. I love the shot where Batman fluidly flows, dives through the car and comes out the other side to, you know, knock the big hulking Four member in the face. And just the use, and what's great about these fights is that it's not just martial arts. It's martial arts alongside the use of gadgets that I extremely love. And then the final, like, big fight between Jason and Bruce from start to finish, from the start where they start off in Crime Alley, which, by the way, I love the flashback scene that I see there. I'll talk about that in a little bit later. But from the start in Crime Alley all the way to the end where Jason shoots at Batman and he ducks and dodges, and they show in slow motion, and he throws that one little batarang at the gun and causes it to misfire. It start to finish, it's everything you want in Batman action. It is just incredible. I absolutely love it. So the action sequences, they really are, I think, one of the primary things that makes this movie great, animation-wise. And then you have the backgrounds and special effects. The special effects themselves were really well done. I think a very fluid collection of both CG and hand-drawn that I think was extremely well done. Very obvious that the city itself was CG, but it felt very par for the course for what these films were. I think it flowed organically with the film itself. It really did, like I said, it really helped towards that sort of grim and gritty feel, gothic feel of the film. That's the end for animation. With that, we are going to take a quick break. I'm going to play some promos for you. And when we come back, we're going to dive into acting and into story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow, the Last Son of Krypton, the Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up.
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless.
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed the break. Let's get right back into it with acting, and we actually have a good list of both protagonists and antagonists to talk about here, including an antagonist that really is going to be in the protagonist because he's more neutral, that being Ra's al Ghul. But let's go over the cast list. So we have Bruce Greenwood as Batman, and Jensen Ackles as Jason Todd / Red Hood, Neil Patrick Harris, everybody's favorite geek actor, as Dick Grayson / Nightwing, the legendary John DiMaggio as the Joker, Wade Williams as Roman Reigns / Black Mask, and Jason Isaacs as Ra's al Ghul. Of course, we also have some other notable casts. Gary Cole was the uncredited. Commissioner James Gordon. Kelly Hu as Miss Lee. Phil Lamar as Rick. Jason Todd in the flashbacks as a teen was Vincent Martellella. And Alexandra Martellella played the younger kid, Jason Todd. Jim Pidlock voiced Alfred Pennyworth, and Bruce Timm even made an appearance as Edward Nygma / the Riddler in a Robin flashback as well. But, you know, let's just go right off with our protagonist and start off with Batman and Bruce Greenwood, and oh my God. He nails Batman. It's one of those things where now I kind of want to see him do Bruce Wayne, because he really hasn't done Bruce Wayne in any of the sort of Batman stuff that he's done. In my mind, the best performance of Batman and who Batman is in my mind is always going to be Kevin Conroy. Both animated, as far as animated and live action all together, you put it all together, the best person who's ever like nailed Batman perfectly has been Kevin Conroy. And for the longest time, Michael Keaton was my my second place. But Bruce Greenwood has surpassed Michael Keaton. He is firmly my second. He is a close second to Kevin Conroy. If there was ever a time for, you know, Warner Brothers to find somebody who could, you know, just match the perfection that Kevin Conroy brought to Batman, at least in my mind, as far as Batman himself is concerned, Bruce Greenwood has nailed it. He nails the sort of gravelly voice. He nails everything that's key to making Batman who he is and why people love him. That sort of dark grittiness he just captured as, you know, essential to telling the story of the character just through the voice. That sort of well-thought detective, you know, from the moments where he's in the Batcave trying to figure it out and he's being very subtle and sort of dark and, yeah, almost understanding to Dick Grayson and kind of scaring him and to the point to where he's being firm and commanding in battle. You know, just everything about it is nailed. Just, my God, I loved hearing him as Batman. It was a thing to where, you know, and just so many great, you know, scenes to where, you know, you're watching it and like, wow, that is Batman. And some of it just, you know, him doing growls and that stuff. I mean, in this case, it's also, I guess, something to where you have to give a little bit of the credit as well to the script, which was written wonderfully. You know, some of my favorite scenes with Bruce Greenwood, you know, and again, evolved, you know, just some great, and this is one thing, another thing, I should say, that this movie had that made it great was the voice acting all around was great. And there was just some great back and forth, which I'll get to at the end of this segment. But Bruce Greenwood just nailed Batman. He is firmly my, you know, very close second to Kevin Conroy as that's who Batman is in my head. When I think of what Batman sounds like, I first think of Kevin Conroy, but a close second is Bruce Greenwood now. Neil Patrick Harris, sort of a geek sort of fan casting, I would say here, as Dick Grayson. And I always have sort of imagined Neil Patrick Harris and sort of would be great as a Dick Grayson slash Robin or slash Nightwing. And he sort of brought sort of the charm of Dick Grayson from the comics into the role. Considering they probably read a lot about Dick Grayson and Nightwing, he should know how to probably bring it to it. I think I just wish there was more of him. I love his banter with Bruce Greenwood when Batman and Nightwing were together. One of my favorites is, you know, that second attempt where, you know, they shoot this sort of bazooka EMP and, you know, he looks at Batman and goes, "You know what I miss running with you for? The toys." And it's, that's Dick Grayson. That's last Nightwing, mind you, for me. Some of the back and forth in that first fight, you know, it's just wonderful. And it just, you know, he really did do a great job as Dick Grayson. I think my thing is I wish I saw more of it. And as I said before, probably Ra's al Ghul, the sort of stoic mentor slash commander aspect that Jason Isaacs really did pretty much hit. That's Ra's al Ghul's character, especially in this movie. Sort of the guilt factor, I think, it's the best thing he brought, because there was this sort of inner sense of guilt that you felt from listening to Ra's every time he talked in this movie. You know, as something that he really regret doing. You know, you could really feel the regret and guilt of some, you know, which, again, it's really part of what makes this movie good and sort of surprising. You know, here's this person who's normally shy from shedding blood and doing this type of stuff, and yet in this case he did. You know, he felt like he crossed the line. You feel the guilt within Ra's al Ghul, and that a lot of that came from Jason Isaacs' performance of it, which is just outstanding. Then I think you move to the antagonist. In this case, Jason Todd Red Hood is the antagonist. He's neutral, at kind of like Ra's, but in this case, he's more towards the antagonist, like being the main sort of antagonist. But again, it's a great part of this story, and Jason Ackles really does a great job in this performance of Jason Todd slash Robin. Red Hood, of this character who, you know, he's neutral. He's doing essentially what Batman does, but not the way you probably like it. He is the anti-hero. And it's strange to find yourself cheering for him. I mean, he's on either side. Just a wonderful performance of this. Just, again, when I read, like, Red Hood and the Outlaws or anything involving Red Hood, I now hear Jason Ackles. That's the voice I hear in my head. Just nails Jason Todd. Just this great sort of this tortured soul within this character, and yet the sort of wit and charm, well, I shouldn't say charm, but the sort of the wittiness in the things he says, and just some great lines, like, you know, they're better, you know, when in that first scene of Red Hood where, you know, he's talking to the drug dealers and they're like, you know, there are better ways to kill yourself, and he goes, yeah. Like, talking back to the guy holding the AK-47. And that's just a great line. It's a great sort of comeback, great wit there. Just the way, you know, like, when he's in the fight with the Fearsome Four, and they think they have the upper hand, you're laughing like, oh no, it's not over. I'm just stalling. and like, he's enjoying the sort of the ass-kicking he's getting, because he knows, like, any minute Batman's about to come. He knows Batman's there, and then Batman comes. It's just, oh, it's just awesome. And the back and forth between him and Bruce Greenwood is, oh my god, it's so wonderful as part of this movie. That final scene, you know, the whole, the torture in his voice when he's talking to Bruce, when he sort of reveals he has the Joker, and he's saying, like, why in God's name is he still alive? You know, you really feel sort of the emotions of this tortured soul and what he's going through. And while you probably disagree with how he's going about it, you feel and you for this person that's gone through this sort of emotional torture. It's just a wonderful performance in the role. John DiMaggio, it's a unique Joker, and I think that's what I like about it. It's a very different Joker. I think he does a wonderful job. I think that the hard part in judging this is immediately you want to probably compare it to the best Joker. Which in my mind is Mark Hamill from the animated series. And that, I kind of agree with my friends Michael Bailey and Shag Matthews. You know, sort of every time the Joker's there, he steals the show. Or for the most part, he does. He did it in 1989. He did it in the animated series. He did it in the Nolan trilogy. Now, here, he doesn't because he had such a great performance from Greenwood and Ackles that really not only matched but surpassed it, but because it was such a different Joker. But, you know, John DiMaggio brought his own uniqueness that it's a wonderful different variation on the Joker. I think it really cashes in on that sort of Neil Adams. Neil Adams was the artist. Denny O'Neill, I mean, sort of aspect that he brought in the 70s. That idea of the Joker being that guy who might kill you because he doesn't like your tie, but at the same time, he might let you live because he likes your tie. You know, that sort of randomness of chaos that the Joker is, and this more subdued version that John DiMaggio brings to the Joker within his own frantic sort of chaoticness. It's just a wonderful different version of the Joker to watch. You know, and kudos on John DiMaggio. I think he really did hold back here with the Joker, which allowed for probably Jake and Ackles and Bruce Greenwood to really be the leads, be the firm focus on the show. Again, something that probably had a lot to do with script, but again, there was just subduedness that I think really helped the Joker be really great in this role, and yet also allowed for this great back and forth. And just, oh god, just my favorite scene involving John DiMaggio is that initial sort of interrogation where Nightwing and Batman are visiting him in Arkham. And he's talking about Jason Todd. He's pissing Batman off. Batman throws him against the door, squeezing his neck. And he goes, "So you're going to do it this time? Just going to put me in another body cast for 6 months?" And then, of course, they have the Joker spot. Oh, God, that's the Joker. That is the Joker. That is the greatness of sort of the interaction between the Joker and Batman there. Just, oh, a wonderful performance. You know, I feel bad for Wade Williams because, you know, the Black Mask, well, a villain and sort of core character. In the probably the deeper story and probably the long run of this story, it is not an important character. He's really a sort of low-end supporting character. The Joker himself is really somewhat more of a supporting character, to be honest. And again, Bruce Greenwood and Jason Ackles really carried this film, bar none, from start to finish, as far as the acting performances goes. But Wade Williams did a wonderful job as this sort of gangster. Again, like I said, I kind of laugh at sort of the Miami Vice series. But this sort of gangster who's like having his turf taken from him, and just the madness that you really felt, I think, from the performance of Wade Williams. Just a wonderful performance. As I said before, just all around the voice acting was just wonderful. Probably one of the best, as far as acting performances all around, and just voice work in a DC animated movie, this is probably the best performance. And that's very hard for me to say, because I love, like, Apocalypse and Kevin Conroy and the others there, you know, bringing them back. And some of the other performances that were done very well, as I try, you know, Public Enemies, Batman Year One, just some great performances all around. And this, to me, is still the best. This is the standard bearer as far as voice acting is concerned in a DC animated movie. or at least it's become it. Let's move on with that two story, and let's go to the main plot. And there's two aspects to the main plot. First off, this is a detective story. That's the main sort of way this story is portrayed. The clues being there, and of course you as an audience being allowed to look at the clues yourself and figure it out, especially if you know the story, figuring out the clues, and to be there and to understand the things that Batman is going through is the other aspect of it. And this is just this emotional turmoil story of so many different things of, Batman finding his partners come back, but he is different. That the thing you've helped create has now been twisted on you. This whole aspect of him teaching Jason, Jason dying, Jason coming back, and as he says in the movie, it's hell of his own making. I think what really makes this very simple sort of detective story where a sort of a beloved character comes back work is the different emotions within each of the characters and the way the torturedness of each of these souls, because each of these characters are tortured in their own way. Batman's with the years of heavy burden, and as he, is chasing down the Red Hood, and it becomes more and more obvious that it's Jason Todd, sort of the guilt and burden of Jason, of this, as he says, his soldier, his partner, he allowed him to, or at least in his mind, he allowed him to die. And again, like I said, made it a hell of his own making. That guilt, that burden is there, and you can feel, again, a lot because of the emotion, and also because of the script. You feel that burden, you feel that emotion, you feel that turmoil and torture within that character. Jason Todd, while he's trying to do, essentially he's trying to do what Batman had brought him up to do, to, fight crime, but he did that twisted way he's figured out to do it, to do it in a way where he feels like he's doing it in a way that's better than Batman's. And while he's trying to stop Batman from stopping him, he's still trying to, obtain Batman's approval for what he's doing. That's sort of where he wants Batman's approval, yet Batman's the core person trying to stop him. And sort of the twist and the emotion and the turmoil that's going on there. I think Alfred in this movie is allowed to be sort of the audience's view to the standpoint. Really being sort of the more down-to-earth person and given thought. Just one of the great scenes is the shock where, it's just match with Jason Todd and the look on Alfred's face. And again, it's one of the things where it's sort of channeling the audience there. And like I said, at the forefront, it's a detective story. And again, that it hits all the key parts you need of a good detective story. And it may not be the, again, because you have that initial scene where they show the death of Jason Todd. And so, it really, I guess the more mystery aspect is taken from it, but it is that detective aspect. Like, here are things going on the characters don't know, and you're allowed to follow with what the characters are learning and feel the emotions they go through as they learn important pieces and as they come to the eventual conclusion that they do. I think going into sort of personal character development, one of the great things is it shows sort of a key aspect of the relationship between Jason Todd, Red Hood, and Batman, and why Jason's way is wrong. Jason, and it's a back way of going into it, but again, it's a unique thing of when you look at the sort of Batman villain list, they're sort of the opposite of Batman, Joker's chaos to Batman's order, for instance. And in this case, Jason Todd represents, different sides of Batman's insanity. And I think the important scene that sort of represents this is, that scene at the end of the movie where, Jason's asking, why? Why? Actually, let me take back insanity. Insanity is not the right word. The right word here is rage. That's the right word. Jason and Batman sort of represent the flip side of Batman's rage. The rage that would be if Batman didn't let, you know, sort of certain rules that he had for himself go. You know, in this case, again, like going back, as I was saying with the scene, you know, he's asking why is Joker still alive? Why can't he cross the line? Because it's too hard to, you know, break your rules or your oath. And Batman goes, no, God Almighty, no. Because it will be too, because it's too easy. And that aspect of, you know, it's too easy. He thinks about it every day. His rage consumes him every day. And he knows if he allows his rage to let him cross that line, even once, even if it's for somebody as deplorable and despicable as the Joker, there's no turning back. He has crossed the line from Batman to a Red Hood. And Jason represents that person who has crossed that line, who has allowed his rage to consume him. You know, and it really, this twisted story of, you know, two people who, not only asexual, but sort of that father-son, mentor-teacher sense of, or mentor-student type of aspect of sort of respect and love that's been twisted and put on two different sides. It's a great emotional story. It makes it a sort of great character study within itself. And of course, you know, it's great seeing, you know, Joker, again, like sad character, but again, taking advantage when he can. Just some great character study of Batman and Jason Todd. And the use of, like I said, of the Joker and Black Mask and Ra's al Ghul and other characters sort of enhance it. Everything, the focus all here is on Jason Todd and on Batman. This is the key aspect of the story. I think the final thing I'll talk about here, again, the legacy here, you know, of being a faithful adaptation to the original Red Hood storyline, which, you know, again, they had the original writer here, and he was allowed to change some things that I think worked better for animation. So while I can't say it's completely faithful, I think in this case, it's probably better than the original story. And as part of this legacy of this death in the family storyline that's been going on since 1988, you know, or at least the different storylines that have happened since then, or I should say after Death in the Family, you know, as Lonely Place of Dying, Red Hood, Hush, and all this stuff, it keeps this legacy going. You know, Death in the Family, like I said before, is a really important, really infamous, really, I think, essential part of comic book history and sort of the DC universe history, along with the, more importantly, the Batman history. And it really sets up, it's kind of funny, I think I've had to, you know, spoiler for those who don't read comics, they killed off another Robin. If you've not known, a couple years ago they introduced a character called Damian Wayne. He was Bruce Wayne and Talia al Ghul's son. Basically, Bruce and Talia, you know, made love in this book called Son of the Demon, and that's where Damien was conceived. But it was sort of an outside-the-continuity story, but a couple of years ago, they brought it into continuity and introduced Damien, who's been, like, brought up by Talia and trained in the League of Shadows, and is sent to be Bruce's new Robin. And you know, he survived the whole DC New 52, and in Batman Incorporated number 8, I want to say, I could be wrong, he was killed basically by a clone of himself, if I understand the story right. And a lot of people are making, and I bring this up because a lot of people are making sort of the comparison here between him and Jason Todd, you know, especially in the fact that, you know, he's gained a bit of a following like Jason Todd did back in the day, but when he first came into the comics, everybody hated him. You know, in fact, again, going to my friends Michael Bailey and Shag Matthews, or the Irredeemable Shag, I should say, and other friends from the whole Unique Geek Space podcast, which one of the first podcasts I listened to. You know, it was this whole thing, like, they kept saying, like, you know, the last time we had a Robin this annoying, we voted to kill him off. So, there's this irredeemable connection there. And I guess the reason I'm bringing this up, because we're seeing it being done over again, of this storyline that basically, if you put them all together over this 20-year span, really turned out to be this great thing for these characters, because it allowed for a great study of the characters and an evolution of the characters beyond maybe what they would have become if left alone. It's a great example of what happens when different minds from different eras, one mind comes with one thing and then it's passed on to the next generation and they're allowed to put their spin on it. And aspects of this movie, I think what this movie does great capturing from that legacy, like I said, is the key character study aspects to it. How it enhances it, how it allows animation and the art of movement here to really help us dive into that character study, into who these characters are, their flaws, their weaknesses, in this twisted story of love and, you know, hate. So I think it's a great piece to allow people to get into death in the family and Lonely Place of Dying and Hush and Under the Red Hood. I'll be honest, I have them on my bookshelf, but probably the biggest reason to why I'm into these stories, besides listening to other people talking about them on podcasts, but really this story really was a great jumping on point for me to want to read Death in the Family, to read Hush, to read Under the Red Hood, to read Lonely Place of Dying. So that's something about it that I really, really enjoy. Overall, when I look at this movie, this is one of the best Batman movies of all time. Again, I go back to the anime series. Batman Masks of the Phantasm is probably my favorite Batman movie of all time. But this movie has firmly cemented itself as a close number two. It's now beaten out the 1980 Batman movie. It's beaten out Dark Knight to me. It just shows you why a lot of times animation can tell a story 100 times better than live action can. Because it's fully ingrained in this fantasy world, and yet it can tell these sort of down-to-earth character study stories. Batman Under the Red Hood, from start to finish, is a wonderful ride that never lets up. And toys with your emotions, and at the end of it, you're finding yourself fast-forwarding through the credits, going back to the menu, and starting over. Because you want to watch it again. It is an absolutely incredible movie, and it's probably, as far as the DCU animated movies are concerned, the best movie they've ever released. In my mind, Batman Under the Red Hood gets 5 stars out of 5. Or whatever rating system, it's the top brass. It's not perfect, but it doesn't have to be. It's everything you need in a wonderful movie. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed the episode today. If you have any comments about my feelings on Batman Under the Red Hood, any other things you think I missed talking about with this episode, or in any case, just want to leave me a comment about the show or anything as part of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, there are numerous ways you can contact the show. One, you can leave us, or email us, I should say. I was about to say leave us a comment, but I'll tell you that in a second. But you can drop us an email at absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a comment by liking us in the Absolution Network on Facebook page by searching for the Absolution Network. Find us, like us, and leave us a comment there. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the webpage itself, where you can find which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, also at Absolution Network is the Otaku Momentum, which I firmly suggest you check out. And, of course, there's also all our other 132 production brethren that I hope you'll check out. Shaft Plus, which is back, featuring Chris and Gene. Their first episode was just wonderful. Absolutely hilarious in a lot of places. It also features my good friend Lucid. All three of them just do a great job. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. You can also check out Random Redbox Reviews featuring Chris. You can find that at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And then, of course, there's my other stuff, which includes Tokyo SOS and Godzilla Podcast. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. You can also check out all my Comic Book Crazy Podcast Network stuff, which includes Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, which just released a new episode. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, on all these sites is a sidebar, which includes links to all our friends, which we highly suggest you check out. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, along with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. He also does From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks. And I highly suggest you check them all out. That is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, it's Batman again. It's also Superman again, as we go for another Superman-Batman team-up. As next week, Batman and Superman are public enemy number one, which pretty much is the title. Because next week, it is Superman-Batman, public enemies. So until next week, my Toonami generation. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.